I was furious when the FDA told me to stop investigating. And, you know, I had the pediatricians at the agency read my paper and what I wanted to publish, and they were like so supportive. But when the powers that be said, no, you cannot publish this, I was like, the switch was flipped for me.
Hello, critical thinkers. Welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Here we question the conventional, explore the unconventional, and seek truth in health and wellness. I'm your host, Mike Vera, and today we have Dr. Renee Dufault. Dr. Dufault pioneers nutritional epigenetics, researching diet's impact on gene expression in autism and ADHD. As an FDA whistleblower, she retired in 2008 to reveal mercury in high fructose corn syrup, highlighting food safety issues. She served in the U.S. Army, Navy, and Public Health Service, specializing in toxicology and environmental health, and she's the author of Unsafe at Any Meal. Her work is used in college courses and clinical trials. Dr. Dufault, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I mentioned there the first bullet point, pioneers nutritional epigenetics. Now, I read these things, I'm familiar, but I feel like maybe some of my audience might not be. That's not a topic we've covered yet. So what does that mean?
It just means how what you eat determines how your genes behave, and then the impact over successive generations. So in other words, what mother eats is going to impact the development of her baby. And so certain genes can be switched on or off depending on what you eat. So if you have genes switched off that allow your body to metabolize and excrete heavy metals, then that's going to impact your baby. And they're going to bioaccumulate heavy metals from the time they're in your womb until all through their, you know.
So often when I talk to people who are kind of really pointing something out important in the culture or in medicine like you are, they have some story around waking up. And sometimes maybe they saw this and they got into it. Sometimes they really believed in the system and then they kind of wake up within the system. What's your story on waking up to all these sorts of things?
Well, my story is I was a toxicologist. I am still. And I was paid by the government to look for exposure issues of concern at different media and different places. And there's all kinds of facts around that and wonderful experiences. And I could go write a book on it. But the bottom line is, when I found the mercury in the high fructose corn syrup, which I did not, you know, it was investigated. I had the support. The most support that I had came from the Armed Forces Radiobiology Research Institute. I had collaborators over there by the Naval Hospital. And I sat on their animal care and use committee. And they were just a fabulous group of physicians and scientists, and they really supported me as a young researcher. And then others, you know, I reached out to others in the country who were experts on heavy metal metabolism and whatnot. And I had put together a model and then explained even more, and they were so supportive. And as a woman in a primarily male field, to have these men who were experts in each of their areas support me like that, it was like, wow. It wasn't like, I just knew I was onto something and that it was very serious. And I had two children. I was a single mother and my own, you know, I mean, I had my own issues of raising the kids on my own. And I was furious when the FDA told me to stop investigating. And, you know, I had the pediatricians at the agency read my paper and whatnot and what I wanted to publish. And they were like so supportive. But when the powers that be said, no, you know, you cannot publish this, I was like, the switch was flipped. For me, it was like, I'm a public health service officer. We're here to serve the public health. What do you mean we cannot tell the American people we have this problem? So for me, it was at that point that I realized I already knew that there was corporate influence, but that was the depths of, what do you call that? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you call that. All I knew is that I gave up my public health service career to further the line of research and to publish and to let people know what was going on. And, you know, the level of corruption, I don't know what you call it. If it's evil or what, it's like, don't they have children? Don't they care? That's when everything just sort of switched in terms of understanding how corrupt the government had become and the whole system and how, you know, Americans knew very little about backstory. Yeah. And I've made a big effort not to be too, I've done a low profile in terms of doing the research on the down low and publishing. Always made sure I published in, you know, important journals that were indexed in major depositories or repositories, and so that other people could find and read and understand. You know, I've not been out there screaming at the top of my lungs or, you know, doing social media or whatever. And now I feel empowered to say more, because now it's so evident, and nobody can just say I'm lying.
As a health coach, I work with a lot of people who try to change their eating habits. And I, you know, habit change can be so tough, and I still see people struggle to make habit changes. This in particular, though, I feel like when people become parents, there's this paradigm shifting moment where they really make a lot of changes that they maybe struggled to in the past, because it's not just for them. It's now for their baby. They're doing things. So have you had the opportunity to talk to parents and kind of see that play out?
Well, I did one clinical trial where I provided nutritional epigenetics education to parents of children with autism and ADHD, and we published those findings. And I found that the parents were very, very grateful for the information. Everything I teach is science-based and fact-based, and I provide references, and references are very, have great esteem. You know, they're true science-based references. And so the parents, they actually did shift their eating so that they were consuming less ultra-processed foods and more whole organic foods. So they did get, you know, I measured their diet pre and post the education. So that was really nice and felt good to me to make a difference. And these parents all were struggling. They had children with autism or ADHD or both. And I still kept in touch with some of them. And I've seen, you know, I've worked with one-on-one with families, and the kids have changed their behavior and whatnot. And the parents are so grateful. And I really am, you know, honored and grateful to have been a part of making people's lives better.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I'm just going to reemphasize your point there that you did it from a very, as scientific as it gets. You have the papers, you have the sources. So for anyone listening to this, I'm going to cite that in the show notes so you can go and actually see the studies for yourself. You mentioned autism there. I just spoke with Dr. Peter McCullough in a recent episode, and half the show was focused on autism. And he mentioned how uncomfortable people can get on this subject. And, you know, there's kind of this acquiescence to accept it and normalize it, and no one's really wanting to look at what might be causing it. So we unpacked that a little bit, and he does tend to emphasize the vaccine side of things. He was saying multiple vaccines could cause autism, and beyond that, there are multiple factors. And so what I've learned from your work is that the food, or at least contaminants in the food, might also be playing a role. Is that what your research showed?
Yes, and now it's not just my research. The line of research, which I started in 2005, is ongoing, and there's people all over the world. And now we have a paper just came out of Denmark showing that prenatal consumption of ultra-processed food is a high risk for having a child with autism or ADHD. And there's many more studies. We know that prenatal consumption of ultra-processed foods leads to heavy metal exposures. The U.S. is behind in the science, but the science is being done elsewhere, and we have there's talented and science, very credible scientists all over the world. It's not the U.S. The U.S. doesn't hold the prize for being like the only smart people. They're all over the world. Yeah. And so it's really exciting for me to see this evidence coming forward. And of course, now we have a big movement. People want to remove certain food ingredients that are known to known to actually have heavy metals. They're allowed to have petroleum-based food colors. The petroleum is mined from the ground, Beverly Hillbilly style. You know, they drill down and they get the oil, and then they use it to make these food colors, and they're expected to contain heavy metals. And FDA has a certification process in place to ensure that yellow 5, yellow 6, red 40 does not contain more than 10 parts per million lead, 1 part per million mercury, and 3 parts per million arsenic. And these certification standards have been around for, 60 years. So there's no surprise that these food colors impact child behavior. That's the backstory, and people don't understand that these food ingredients have been on the market before there was FDA. We're talking, grandfathered in, and people just don't understand the American food or the international food, and that some of these things have been banned in different countries for, many, many years, 15 or more. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but the autism is indefinitely associated with the ultra-processed food consumption, and it's getting worse because each successive generation passes on these gene behaviors that, genes switch on and off, and it'll take, if people change their diet now, it's still going to take one or two generations to flip the switch and these epidemics,
What makes you say that?
Well, because I've seen in children with autism, I've seen the behaviors improve when they remove the heavy metals and the organophosphate pesticides from the diet. So they become much more calm, more mellow, way more manageable. The huge difference is amazing. But they can't ever go back to eating that stuff.
Right.
So it would take, at least another generation of a clean diet for any healing to take place, in my view. We don't have the studies to prove it, but I'm just saying what I say because of what I've seen. So, we've been having the ultra-processed food since the 50s, and high fructose corn syrup came into the market in the late 70s, and that's a huge commodity. Americans are consuming 20 some odd pounds per year now of that stuff. When I did my initial research and found mercury in high fructose corn syrup, they were consuming 60 pounds per person per year on average, adults. So, when you're only consuming 4 pounds of broccoli compared to the 60 pounds of this zinc depleting substance, and it's been shown now, even there was a new study by UC Davis researchers in 2023 or 4 showing that high fructose corn syrup consumption in college students led to zinc depletion. So, and that's not the first time that finding has been found. So, and there are other things on the market that do that as well. Well, we need zinc in our body. It's part of our immune system in order to build the molecule that's required to remove these heavy metals from our body. And if we're zinc deficient, then we're going to be accumulating these heavy metals. So it is what it is. These are the facts. This is not like a theory.
Yeah.
This is the science-based facts here.
Well, if you're comfortable with this, I do want to ask just for a moment, a little beyond the facts, because as you can imagine, a lot of people do like to speculate about what's really going on here. And when I talk about this to people, they say, you know what? It's just greed. They just want the money. And that's what it's all about. And there's a few ways to look at that. But then there's other people who say this is basically part of a movement to like an agenda to kind of keep people sick. And, I try to be reasonable about this, but when you tell me on one hand that there's heavy metals in the food, they know about this and they allow it, and at the same time that high fructose corn syrup causes functions within the body to really make it more challenging to get rid of these heavy metals, it's hard not to look at this and think that it's orchestrated. So, it is a little speculative, but do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, this is an interdisciplinary issue. Okay, like the cause of disease is you need a lot of different types of expertise to be able to do an interdisciplinary study. And in the United States, it's not been interdisciplinary very much. It's very siloed. And so that is why people don't find the cause of disease. And the having worked at FDA for 9 years and understanding the history of FDA and how FDA works and how it's, you know, I mean, the Congress has influence over FDA. The corporations have extreme influence over FDA because the congressmen are elected with corporate dollars. And so, you know, there are the ability to change things really must rest with Congress. And Congress has to say, okay, FDA, remove this substance from the food supply. And that in doing that, then they risk not getting corporate dollars from big farm or big food. So they're not going to do it. What we see are real changes in our society are done by the states. The states lead. The states make those changes with marijuana, with now we're looking at state leadership and food colors. And once the states have the law, the ability, constitutional authority to make things more stringent. They can do this. They don't need the U.S. government to tell them that they can or can't. Look at what they're doing with marijuana, right?
Yeah.
Even though the feds have a, you know, thing with that. So we have a lot of hope now that we can see our food supply cleaned up. The corporations are very greedy and they're profit driven because they are publicly mm-hmm. owned, many of them, even the privately, whatever. They care about, you know, how much profits they're going to make. And these heavy metals help with shelf life. You have a little bit of mercury, then you're going to resist mold. Mercury-based chlorine is used to bleach flour, and then you're going to have less mold, and it'll be on the shelf longer. So there's the reasons why these things have been used for so many years and why the corporations don't want to remove them. So then the question becomes, you know, how does this happen? Well, you know, back at think and envision snake oil. You know, the picture of the snake oil wagon that came to town back in the olden days, and there were no, you know, government bureaucracies or agencies to regulate. And people mm-hmm. died from drinking, you know, whatever this, that, or the other, or this medicinal. So when FDA finally came on the scene, a lot of things were already on the market. And so they just grandfathered them in. And they also have a risk assessment process that says, if it doesn't kill you in 24 hours, then we can approve it.
Is that GRAS, G-R-A-S?
Generally recognized as safe. No, that's a, okay. that's a separate process. But I'm saying that in the risk assessment process.
Okay. Gotcha.
All of the agencies, EPA, FDA, they look at a single element. They say, okay, if we eat this amount of lead for 50 years, blah, blah, blah. So first of all, they don't even look at humans for chronic exposures for years. They look at mice in rat animal studies. And then they never, ever, they don't even have a model yet for co-exposures. In other words, when you're exposed, you eat a product like Fruit Loops or what are those candies with all of M&Ms or whatever, and you're eating that often, you're having co-exposures to arsenic, lead, mercury, and cadmium all at once.
And so, another one I see is titanium dioxide.
That's in things too, and it has its own issues. So there's a lot of things in the food supply that are not healthy. And there's very little research. The Chinese are way ahead of us in the co-exposure research. And that shows what happens when you have all of this stuff going on. And so the FDA regulations, EPA regulations, they don't address co-exposures. Hence, we have chronic disease. And that is why we have chronic disease. So, you know, if the safety regulations are geared to exposure to one single substance and they're not looking at co-exposures and synergistic effects, meaning if you have mercury and lead, the mercury will just triple the adverse effects of the lead alone, you see. And these are basic toxicology principles, right? So who's trained in toxicology? Well, doctors aren't trained in toxicology. We're lucky if they even get to take a nutrition class, you know, MDs, whatnot. And everybody in our society in the United States, they're motivated, especially in the research area, for patents and drugs. The emphasis is not about prevention of disease because there's so much money to be made out of pharmaceuticals and medicines. So preventive medicine, prevention of disease, you know, all of that has just not been paid attention. I mean, but now we're seeing this tremendous increase in autism and ADHD. And, you know, there's kids that are not even identified in public schools. And I actually work at a public school, so I see them. And they have these conditions. And they're not even identified, and they're struggling. So I would guess that probably 25, 30% of our children in public schools are impaired. Yeah, and that's a huge number. The military sees it because, you know, these kids come out of high school and some of them, want, you know, do apply for the military. And believe me, if you had a military guest in recruitment, they'd give you an earful.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, you lay out a pretty strong case, and you even answered, I think, a little bit part of my next question, because when you go through social media, every once in a while, I'll see some big influencers who do have credentials. People like Dr. Ids is one of them. He's a medical doctor. Dr. Lane Norton is a PhD. People who focus on the topics we're talking about now, but kind of the opposite of your perspective, where they'll say, hey, you know what, the FDA, and I don't mean to generalize, I don't know their specific takes on what we've talked about today, but I'm talking about their attitude as a whole. You know, I'd imagine they'd say something like, look, the FDA, they have very rigorous practices, and if this were a problem, it would be addressed. So what message do you have to the people like that?
Well, you have to look at someone's background, and, you know, everybody's going to have their point of view. And like I said, I mean, the understanding of toxicology, of how atoms come together to build molecules, you know, the understanding of genetics and how the switches work and how, you know, certain molecules that are proteins and they have a job in the body, how they need to work. I mean, these are complicated concepts, and the average person, you know, you say nutritional epigenetics and they're like, oh, you know, it's scary. And then realizing what the problem is in the food supply, it is scary. But all you have to do is look at the United States in terms of developed countries, and we're at the bottom of the list for health, you know, state of health. And we have far more autism and ADHD, all kinds of Western diseases that compared to other countries that have already banned this stuff. And they have cleaner. I've been to speak at conferences in Europe, and I've gone through the grocery stores. I can't believe how different it is. And to people that have a different view, I mean, I would say, well, you know, where did they come from? What's their expertise? What kind of formal training have they had? I mean, people have their perspectives based on what they know. And everybody in this day and age, they can say whatever they want to say on social media, and they can, you know, even say misinformation, things that aren't true. And if they get the hits and they're selling ads, I mean, the more outrageous you are, you're going to, you know, people are going to want to hear that everything's okay. You know, the U.S. is fine. Food supply is fine. Where does that motivation come from? Are they affiliated? Are they selling ads with certain companies? I mean, I don't have any ads, and I don't make any money. All my research is done, has been done as a volunteer. I work with volunteer collaborators, and we don't have any sponsors per se. Every now and then somebody will donate, but it's usually an individual, an attorney who believes in our cause or whatever, or a researcher, a statistician who believes in what we do, or, you know, family, friends, whatever. We don't even have paid employees. So you've got to look at why people are saying what they're saying.
Yeah, and just my own personal take for what it's worth, I find that it's often people in biochem. That's why you see it's a lot of medical doctors, and then the PhDs who kind of take that corporate defensive position are often in biochem. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I do think, and you did mention this, I think, a bit earlier, how these silos keep people focused, like hyper-focused on one specific topic. Mm-hmm. And so then you're kind of put in a position where you have to defend all the life's work that you've been studying and maybe even researching and implementing with patients or clients. So it can be quite messy. And I think it's tough for people to just take a step back. I really don't think most of them are bad people. Some of them are probably taking some money. They're selling supplements that, you know, maybe they think is helpful, but they're kind of bending the rules a little bit. And so, yeah, It's messy, but we are seeing a lot of headlines now with the MAHA movement. I saw that RFK Jr. is helping to take out pharmaceutical influence from the FDA. And at the same time, I've spoken with guests who are quite skeptical of this MAHA movement. Are we seeing smoke screens like politicians often do? So are you optimistic, or do you think, you know, all of this might be just politicians making promises they won't deliver on?
I'm very optimistic because at least they're talking about it. And they haven't said, and the FDA has, prior to the election of Trump, even the FDA had finally come around. They had an initiative to zero, you know, zero heavy metals in the food supply. Congress in 2021, was it? Yeah, 2021, I think, or 2022. 2021, they released two reports of the heavy metals in baby foods. And, you know, this is just, for me, I've been working on this issue since 2005, before I left the FDA. To me, it's very hopeful. I have a lot of hope now that by the time I die, that we'll see some major changes in our food supply. And I applaud all of those who are contributing to the effort to clean up our food supply. The mothers out there and the politicians that, you know, are working on this issue. And at the state level, the nonprofit groups, you know, I had a lot of skepticism of some of these nonprofit groups who have been working through the years on different things, and they wouldn't go by the facts in the food colors and the food. They didn't want to touch, you know, they'd get into the pesticides a little bit. They wouldn't tell it like it is, you know, and it's like, now they're even on board and putting aside their favorite toxins in favor of trying to move some of these other things along. And I think I'm seeing more working together than I have in the past. And it's bipartisan, you know, at the state level.
Hey, have you noticed how broken conventional medicine is? And it only treats symptoms instead of solving root problems. I mean, it's no wonder more people than ever struggle with chronic health issues, stubborn weight gain, low energy, and plenty more challenges. Actually, here's how Mike, a client of mine at Avantia Health Optimization, feels about our hyper-personalized approach.
Number one, you save me focus of attention. I have other things that are pressing and pending. I no longer have the playing time. So I need somebody to help me get the information I need specifically. You're saving me hours upon hours of time, but you're also saving me the youthfulness and clarity you have of cutting through the chase. So you have saved me time, financial money, the thinking, and the labor, the intense labor, and that is worth all the money in the world.
So as most of you know, I'm Mike Vera, board-certified health and wellness coach, host of Healthy and Awake podcast, and founder of Avantia Health Optimization. We deliver hyper-personalized coaching addressing lifestyle as the missing link. Whether you're battling chronic health challenges, aiming for sustainable weight loss, or you're a busy executive or athlete needing peak performance, I'm your guy. Your first session is just $1, so you can try out health coaching, get a feel for it. And you can visit AvantiaHealthOptimization.com or visit the link in the show notes. So check out Avantia, because your health deserves solutions that truly work for you.
And so I really feel hope that, you know, Americans are finally waking up and they're finally getting it. And if nothing else, you know, the billionaires and the oligarchs have always been in charge of what gets done by some of these agencies. You know, agencies that cater to the billionaires and the corporate interests. So I've always said that, you know, there's undue influence and we have to change our election system. And, you know, there's been efforts, bipartisan efforts, and unfortunately nothing's been accomplished to get the corporate money out of elections. But when I was in the government, we referred to the bureaucracy as a corporocracy. Because everybody knew. Everybody. And that was 20 years ago. And so, and I would say that and people didn't want to hear that. You know, it's like, we have a democracy and our vote counts. And so now it's like, okay, well, the billionaires are out there running things. They're not behind the scenes, the dark what do they call that? Dark.
Yeah, operating from the shadows.
Yeah. So now they're at their front and center and there's no hiding it. And so if Americans can't see that, you know, and understand where it came from, I feel sorry for us.
Yeah.
You know, because it's all out there now. And if they don't understand at this point, you know, I think they are understanding because we're seeing all this activity from the States. So I'm hopeful, more hopeful than I've ever been.
I think a lot of people are understanding, but a lot of people might have trouble accepting. And I think there's a lot of things happening in the world right now where that's the case, because it's, I imagine I build my whole worldview on trusting authority and people in white coats and people with letters after their names, just without any scrutiny whatsoever. And that's my worldview. And now all of a sudden, those people that I trusted, this worldview that I just built my foundation on, is now kind of crumbling in front of me. And all these people, it's the foundation of my thinking is to outsource these decisions to these people that I've deemed trustworthy. And now I'm learning, oh no, and like, I have to make these decisions for myself. I was lied to. Maybe these lies caused me to do harm to myself. I can definitely imagine how it's tough for someone to accept something like that. It's
I know that you've got the believers. It's almost a cult. And I have them in my own family, frankly. You know, Western medicine, MD degree, and taking medications and this and that. And it is what it is. And that's, people seem to need that. They need that because I guess they're afraid of living or maybe afraid of dying. But I'm also, you know, like a biologist, and I'm licensed to teach biology. I've taught biology, college level physiology. And, you know, the fact is we are going to die. Everybody's going to die. I mean, we have power over how we die. A lot of people don't understand that. But yes, you do. I mean, I'm not personally at 66 almost. I'm not on any meds. All my peers are, you know, but I have normal biomarkers. And I walk regularly. I eat whole organic foods. Very few ultra-processed foods. And I've seen, you know, I've had friends that have recovered from things by when they listen to me, you know, as far as diet recommendations. So I think we have a lot of power in our own hands, and we can choose how we're going to die to some degree if we do the exercise and the healthy diet and the healthy food. That's my belief. I hang on to that. And I'm not willing, because I worked at the FDA and I've worked in the medical field and whatnot, and I understand the behind the scenes. I'm just not willing to put my faith in that stuff, you know. Sure. And you have to understand other countries do it different, you know, Chinese medicine, you know, there's all these different ways in here. India, and the Western medicine model is not the only model. I remember when DOs were, you know, the osteopaths were discriminated against. They weren't even allowed to do prescriptions. And now they are, you know, it's like acupuncturists were quacks, and, you know, and things are different now. I mean, Western medicine does not hold the key to good health, frankly. It never did. So it's experimental to a large degree. I mean, even things and pharmaceuticals that are approved by FDA, they aren't necessarily good. You know, it's always approved with the idea, well, this will only help 50% of them, you know. And it's like, oh my God, if that's your bar, I'd rather take my chances with healthy food. Thank you very much, you know. And then the adverse effects after every pharmaceutical ad, this may cause this, that, and the other thing. You know, it's like, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, a few moments ago, you mentioned that you are optimistic, that things are moving in the right direction. Let's speed that up. Let's say you snap your fingers and we are 20 years ahead, and all of these challenges we've discussed today, and maybe even some of the ones we haven't, have been addressed. And we kind of live in this ideal, perfect food landscape. What do you think things look like on the other side?
I think we're going to see regenerative agriculture. We're going to see lands that were poisoned become soil that's worth growing our vegetables in. I think we're going to see a big healing process. I have to be optimistic. There's so many people out there in regenerative agriculture that are trying to farm differently and replenish the soils with all the important elements for growing healthy crops.
And so that's what regenerative agriculture, just for anyone who doesn't know, is that?
Yeah, that's okay. What it is. And it's a step beyond organic farming to, you know, let's clean up the lands that have been destroyed by big ag chemicals. It's like big ag farmers have moved, some of them have changed up and said, we're going to heal our land, we're going to regenerate the soil, and we're going to grow crops healthy crops. So that's a huge movement, and I love it. I love that it's happening, and I love everybody doing out there. You know, that's the cause, and we can't fix everything by ourselves from our silo. We have to be interdisciplinary. We have to work together. And so these guys are just awesome. And I see the nutrition profession, a lot of them who have been old school nutritionists, realizing how bogus the current system is and trying to do things different, trying to make a difference. And that's just amazing. You know, I mean, people are seeing the truth, and you can't not unsee once you've seen. And so there are people in the industry of healthcare that have made millions off of practicing whatever they practiced in the Western medicine, radiology, whatever. And now they've turned their back on that, and they're out there trying to make a difference. And so that's great. You know, I mean, it's like people are finally deciding to be honest with their friends and family and their fellow professionals to tell the truth. And that's great. I think we have so much to be hopeful about. And, you know, with from the farming to the actual produce on the shelf and the foods on the shelf. And I envision supermarkets being more like you find in European Union, where there's just fewer harmful chemicals and whatnot in the food supply. And our disease prevalence will go down. People will live longer and be healthier for longer. And they're not going to need the pharmaceuticals in order to stay alive. You know, I see people, I'm very much hopeful that things are going to, they say there's a, what's the word, a phrase for, you needed a certain percent of the population to turn a certain
critical
way.
Critical mass.
Critical mass. I think we'll achieve critical mass, and people will come together. And the things that are happening in the world, with changes that we're seeing in the climate, that'll further bring people together, because, you know, we're going to have hardships, you know, because that is inevitable. And so, you know, I think good people will come together. And I don't know what all those billionaires are going to do, but I think they're buying up islands and buying up lands elsewhere and getting their foothold into places where they can survive and keep their money bags.
Yeah. You paint a really nice picture there, and it does seem like we're moving in that direction. And we'll see what happens with those billionaires on the islands, because there's a lot of eyeballs on them now, and I think that's only going to increase. But so, you know, we're optimistic about the future, but in the present moment, a lot of people might be leaving this episode with a total distrust of the food in the grocery stores. And you mentioned something about soil. Can people even grow their own food at home? So if you had to pick maybe a few bullet points as takeaways for people who want to make better choices around their food, what advice might you leave for them?
Well, I did a clinical trial and helped college students switch to a healthier diet. It was in a food desert. So it was on an Indian reservation with a grocery store too far away from everything. Those students did manage to switch to a healthier diet, and I went with them through the grocery store and we picked what would be the healthiest product to buy under the circumstances. And we saw glucose levels go down, heavy metal, mercury levels go down. So I know it can be done. So even in the direst of circumstances, but I mean, they can start some gardens if they own land, or even in the city, they have a lot of city urban gardens going on now, and that's very hopeful. And regenerative agriculture can be done right there. I mean, you are competing with the air quality and all of that, but it doesn't matter. You're still going to have better than what you might have where they're intentionally poisoning the crop to repel pests, right? So it's still better. And I do think you can find healthier food no matter where you're at. You just have to learn what that means. And we need more work on that. I'm trying hard to find people willing to work with me on providing educational means for people so they understand what healthier means, healthier choices, and avoiding those that are unhealthy. And so, you know, you want to eat organic if you can. Mm-hmm. If you can't eat organic, then you want to rinse your produce really well. I mean, there's been studies showing you can get rid of a lot of the pesticides that way.
Especially with baking soda and vinegar, too, I think.
I've heard that. I don't see any studies on it, but even with washing with water, that's been done. And then it's all in my book, actually, some of that, those tips. But buy frozen, like if you're going to buy conventional, because you don't have anything else, buy frozen. Keep stuff in, because they don't need as much pesticide on the product that they're going to freeze with, because freezing is the shelf life mechanism. So definitely buy organic flour if you do any baking. And yeah, I mean, you want to avoid the pesticides whenever possible. And then do not buy the foods with these horrendous food colors and whatnot. Just avoid them. Do not buy them. Teach your kids to eat other stuff and whole foods, you know. Nothing wrong with oatmeal. Hello. Organic oatmeal is prepared. One single ingredient. You can add a little maple syrup or some banana or whatever. Raisins. And get your kids used to that. And need more calcium, you know. Nothing wrong with cottage cheese and yogurt and all that and regular dairy. I mean, a lot of people are anti-dairy, but we need more calcium in our diet. And so that's a quick way to do it. And just stick with the foods with the least number of ingredients. One is best. If you've got to have another one or two, you know, make sure they're something you understand what it means. And that's my parting words.
I love that. And I know there's so many people, as these changes continue to happen, I do fear that a lot of people are going to kind of stay in the same mindset where it's like, oh, good. Now the experts are figuring all this out for us. Now I still don't have to think about it and they'll take care of us. But the beauty of the conversation we had today is that we're speaking to an audience that's healthy and awake. They get this stuff. They're going to apply it. And the takeaways you just gave us are some of the most valuable takeaways, seriously, because it's so practical. And especially since, you know, I lived in North Philly, Olney, which is, I think it's like the second most ghetto place compared to Kensington. And so I've lived around food deserts. I went to a grocery store. There's this phrase for something that's high quality, top dollar. This grocery store was called bottom dollar. So you go in there and it's just the brightest coloring on all the packaging, which is already for me a red flag. When you see the brightest colors on the packaging, mm-hmm. you look at the ingredients, sure enough, at 99% of them you can't pronounce. And the people there aren't thinking about these things, well, at least, you know, 10 or more years ago when I was living there. And so now people are starting to think about them more and to hear that there's, what did you call them? Urban gardens?
Yeah, urban gardens.
That gives me so much hope because Philly, those are my people. I love Philly. And I know so many people in cities just don't have access to good food. And to hear that things like that are moving in that direction and people are having more options and people like you are talking about these things, bringing awareness. I'm so grateful. I know my audience is grateful. This was a fantastic episode. So Dr. Dufault, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Where can people find out more about you and your work and the links that we already discussed, the resources we already discussed? I will put the links in the show notes, but anything you wanted to close us out with on where people can find out more about you?
Well, I have the nonprofit foodingredientsafety.org. And then there's my personal website, reneedufault.com. And we always, you know, have donations to the nonprofit are always appreciated. And if you want to buy my book and the study guide, which I've used in different, the end content in different clinical trials, they're both available at amazon.com. I recommend them both together. And because we learn best by doing. And so the study guide gives there's reading guides that you fill in the blanks, and then there's activities and kitchen covered things and whatnot. It's really great for a study group. So you can do it with more, you know, like a book study. And over 10 weeks, you can change the way you eat. And it's a habit. It's a new habit. And it makes all the difference in the world. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I welcome any collaborations. You know, if anybody wants to do a clinical trial, or, and I've got a protocol that's coming out. It's already published in the World Journal of Experimental Medicine, and that'll be really good to be able to show that one, the one mechanism, line of research causing autism and ADHD, pregnant women and following their birth outcomes and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm happy to continue the line of research and collaborate with anyone who wants to find the answers.
Well, folks, check the links in the show notes. They will be there. But also, stay healthy, stay awake. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Please remember to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. Or if you're watching this on Rumble or YouTube, please be sure to give us a thumbs up and leave a comment down below. Let us know what you thought or if you had any questions based on what we talked about in this episode. And of course, it couldn't hurt to share it with your friends, those who maybe are awake, or those, of course, who are waking up. Thanks again. Stay healthy. Stay awake.